Northern Ireland's political crisis deepened yesterday when the head of the civil service said there is now a lack of clarity on what decisions departments can make in the absence of ministers. David Stirling also warned that events such as the Northwest 200 could now be at risk.
We now have a court judgment which, in our view, gives a lack of clarity about what it is civil servants can and cannot do, particularly when they're faced with major decisions. And it's for that reason that the Department for Infrastructure has decided that it needs to appeal this particular judgment. And I, certainly as head of the service, am fully supportive of that.
And do you know what quite a few of you might be doing? You might be sitting back and thinking to yourself, oh, well, there's another news story. This is a story that affects your life. And you might feel this in a few months' time or a year's time when you think to yourself, why hasn't that been done? And about the education of my kids, why hasn't that been done? And our roads and the health service, would they be putting up with this anywhere else in the UK? Let's find out what exactly you are putting up with our political editor, Mark Devenport. Morning to you, Mark.
Morning, Stephen.
Spell this out to us. So what situation are we in now in terms of Northern Ireland?
Well, we're in a bit of a no man's land. I suppose we have been for the last 16 months. But the kind of room for manoeuvre which the civil servants thought they had has got an awful lot smaller since that judgment on the High Town incinerator. Essentially, they started off being quite cautious, just moving forward in line with any previous decisions that they had from ministers. As time went on and the deadlock continued, it was hard for them to continue that cautious approach. So they started expanding things out and saying, well, look, if there's a clear, obvious public interest as to why a decision should be taken here or a decision should be taken there, then we'll get on and we'll do it. And that was maybe uncontentious when it came, for instance, to, you know, some of the things that I remember you previously examining, such as our response when there was stormophilia, you know, and who was going to start coordinating emergency efforts. Yeah. No one was going to move in and judicially review that. But when it comes to something like a planning application, in this case with 4,000 and protests, you know, Peter May felt that there was a public interest in moving forward because of the need to deal with waste across six council areas in Northern Ireland. The protesters obviously did not agree with that public interest, and they have been able to effectively pull the rug from under the civil servants' feet by saying, look, we now have a judgment which says that it's up to a minister to make these decisions. Irrespective of the political situation, the judge is saying, you know, it's not up to me to decide whether there should be a devolved executive back, whether there should be direct rule. I'm just looking at the law. There should be a minister. That's what it says. It doesn't give these rights to civil servants in the department on their own.
So here's where we're at, Mark. No direct rule. No minister. No civil servant can make the decision anyway, either.
That is basically...
So that's where we're at in this country.
That is where we're at. Now, civil servants have been moving ahead and making those decisions. They've now been told by Mrs. Justice Keegan, no, you can't do that. I think what they are now seeking to clarify, in her ruling, she did talk a number of times about important decisions. And obviously, most people regard something as major as a £240 million development of a waste incinerator as major. But I think what the civil servants would want is they either would want this overturned, or more likely they will want clarity, as they are pointing out. When is a major decision a major decision, and when's it a minor decision?
So is it a statement of fact that as we stand at the moment, subject to appeal, no major decisions can be taken in Northern Ireland?
It appears to be the case. I mean, they seem to be
That's
getting
extraordinary.
On. Yeah, they're getting on with it anyway. If you take the example that David Stirling gave in the Northwest 200, they went ahead and they signed that order in any case, more or less, but mindful of the fact that possibly somebody could take them to court and overturn it. I think we're in a situation where, you know, there are probably decisions in the sort of day-to-day running of departments that it's highly unlikely anyone's going to go to court and question, but quite possibly you could get all sorts of decisions being questioned. And of course, I think it's the Alliance Party in the shape of Naomi Long and Stuart Dixon have already mentioned this ridiculous catch-22 situation. Who took the decision to appeal this judgment as to whether they had the authority to take that decision in the first place?
03030 805555 as you pick up the phone today. Now that this judge has made the decision, Mark, is the civil service likely to stop making major decisions? Are they likely to follow what the judge has said?
Certainly, I think that they're going to take a more cautious approach pending this appeal, and that could take a matter of months. Already, the infrastructure department has said that whilst you know, this process of appeal is going on, that they will stop making decisions on major regional planning applications. So I've just got their statement up. While the appeal process is underway, the department will not take any further decisions on regionally significant applications and continues to carefully consider the full implications of the judgment. So we do know that in relation to that, things like, I suppose, possibly Casement Park, possibly the planned gas-fired power station in the Harbour Estate in Belfast could just come to a shuddering halt.
And Mark, I can tell you that we've just, the Nolan Show's just got a statement through within the last few seconds. We hear about these fixed odd betting terminals and the decision that's been made throughout the rest of the UK to reduce the maximum stake from £100 to £2. These fixed odd betting terminals, that's where you can play the roulette and the slot machines. They're known as the crack cocaine of the betting world. We've just had this statement from the Department for Communities here in Northern Ireland. And they say the department notes the announcement made by the Department for Digital Culture, Media and Sport regarding a reduction in the maximum stake permitted for fixed odd betting terminals in response to the recent consultation. Any proposed changes to Northern Ireland gambling law would be for an incoming minister to determine. So there's another example today of something that isn't, it's just not going to happen in Northern Ireland. There's nobody to take the decision.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, there are, let's look at, say, the gambling terminals. I'm no expert in gambling, but one would assume that people who run those gambling terminals have a commercial interest in keeping them going, and they have resources because they make profits out of it. They can therefore employ lawyers. And if the Department for the Community said to you in a statement, we think this is a great idea, we've decided to go ahead with it, and it'll all come in tomorrow, then you could imagine that people who run the terminals might have a quick look at Mrs. Justice Keegan's judgment and say, hang on, where's the minister? Who's got the authority to do this? We're off to court, and the whole thing would come to a shuddering halt.
Well, they're not going to have to do it, because we learned now this morning, within the last few minutes, that the department, they're not going to do anything.
Exactly.
They're not going to budge. They're stalemate.
So the response from, I mean, it may well be that the department would have taken a fair bit of time, quite often it does, to mirror changes across in England in any case. But I think the outcome of this judgment is it will take an awful lot longer, because it will take a cautious approach. Everybody will say, could this lay us open to a legal challenge? Yes, it possibly could. Let's do nothing.
The co-chair of Unison has contacted us this morning, Conor McCarthy. Morning to you, Conor.
Hello, Stephen.
You're the co-chair of the Unison Health Committee. What impact is this going to have on the people you represent?
Well, as I say, there's a pay deal on the table at the minute across in England in regards to healthcare workers. It's currently being voted on. The outcome of that will be known around the 6th of June. And a consequence of that, if accepted by the membership in Unison and the other unions, that healthcare workers, both in England and the health sectors in Wales and Scotland, will get a pay deal, which is significantly higher than what healthcare workers are on here, and even though we're the lowest paid now. So it will be even lower paid when that comes around. So what will require, usually in them circumstances, will, if a minister had been in place here, would they mirror what was being offered to healthcare workers across the water and implement accordingly? Now, but we don't have that, so we're going to have to rely on the Permanent Secretary of Health to implement that now.
But a few months ago, the Permanent Secretary did introduce a pay increase for your workers.
Pressure.
But now maybe they won't do it. Now they might not do it the next time, Mark, Conor.
Well, through pressure from Unison in regards to showing and demonstrating that the AFC, the Agenda for Change package that was brought in for the health service in 2004 is part of an ongoing reform package. And we proved that it wasn't anything new. And therefore, and we were right in what we said in regards to it can have a permanent secretary approval for implementation, because it was already an agreed policy. So there's this ambiguity around continuing on what is already agreed packages of reform and policy that were in place when ministers were in place, and then the ambiguity around implementing new policy.
Conor, thank you for bringing that to us today. 030 30 80 55 55. Mark Devenport, before you go this morning, where's the Secretary of State Karen Bradley in all of this? Is she going to bring in direct rule or not? Is she going to bring in some type of, is she responsible for no decision being able to be made in Northern Ireland. What's her view on this?
Well, in the immediate aftermath of that court decision, we had some politicians and certainly some former Stormont advisors saying, look, this means that there's no alternative other than direct rule because the whole place is becoming ungovernable. When I was up chatting to some of the senior civil servants yesterday, they had no expectation of any move from Karen Bradley or Theresa May along those lines, because Karen Bradley has always said, oh, I don't want to do anything that might make the situation worse. She's kind of, as she sees it, I think, caught between a rock and a hard place. If she brings in direct rule, she might have Sinn Féin saying you've completely reneged on the St Andrews Agreement, whereby Tony Blair promised to effectively take the power of suspending devolution away and did so. So there's the fear from London that it might make things worse.
But technically, Mark, can she make the decision?
I am told, you know, she has done something. She's brought through some kinds of legislation which would have normally been brought through by the Stormont Assembly, for instance, the budget and various regulations to do with renewable heat and so on. But chatting to some of the officials yesterday, they said that at the moment, if, say, Karen Bradley was to write a letter to the Infrastructure Department saying, I hereby give you authority to go ahead and do the Hightown incinerator or whatever it is that we're talking about, they said, well, that letter wouldn't have any more standing, Mark, than if you had written the letter. That in terms of those kind of decisions, not legislation, but actual sort of, if you would like, executive decisions, as things stand, because devolution hasn't been suspended, she and her junior minister don't particularly have the authority to start signing off on things.
Yeah, but hold on a moment, but she's not suspending it.
Yeah, well, she hasn't suspended it, but not within the devolved position that we've got at the moment, the limbo. She doesn't necessarily have the authority to just start signing off on kind of day-to-day decisions. So what probably she would have to do is, well, she'd either have to go for direct rule, which it seems like she doesn't want to. Maybe one way might be to pass some kind of legislation giving the officials the authority that they've been told they don't have. I mean, that's another possibility, is in terms of a fudge. But in terms of a sort of a day-to-day, just her sitting there and signing off on their various decisions, apparently it's not as easy as it seems.
And meanwhile, the politicians continue to get their salary. They continue to get paid. I can see that coming up on the phones here already this morning. Yeah. So this is politicians who cannot feed in, cannot actually, the end situation here, I'm suffering from a little bit of jet lag, by the way, but they cannot, at the end of the day, make decisions that will affect our lives in Northern Ireland, and they continue to get their salaries.
Now, obviously, she has said that she's going to make a statement about this, and one is expecting that she'll implement that independent report that recommended a cut in a third of the salaries, but she is being pretty slow about doing that. It seems like she probably hasn't got much more time to go. Of course, the politicians would say they're doing their constituency work. And here's the irony in all of this. A number of them did their constituency work, lined up alongside the campaigners against the Hightown incinerator, celebrated the outcome of the judgment. And by the by, the outcome of the judgment has made things, in terms of the Stormont deadlock, if anything, even worse.
Mark, thank you very much indeed. Morning to you. Kelly Armstrong from the Alliance Party with us today. Good morning to you, Kelly.
Good morning, Stephen. Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be back, but I'm coming back to a country where, you know, we're reporting now on the news that Northern Ireland can't make a decision.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
So that's it. For everybody listening to this show today, that's where we're at. Northern Ireland, PLC, cannot make a decision.
For the last 15 months, we have been putting pressure on our civil service for them to take forward key decisions that they weren't sure whether they could or couldn't make. The decision now has come forward from Mrs. Justice Keegan that they shouldn't be making any decisions, but there is this ambiguity about what is important in key decisions and what are day-to-day running issues.
Northern Ireland can't make a key decision, Kelly.
But that's why the appeal has come forward, because only an appeal court can set a precedent. So if the appeal court says, you know, Justice Keegan was completely right, then no decisions will be taken by civil service. If it comes back and says, actually, this is what a key decision is, or what it could look like, or what the criteria is for a key decision, then they would be. But, Stephen, let's be very honest here. The reason why all of this has come about is because we don't have a Northern Ireland Assembly. If we had ministers in place, we wouldn't be putting this pressure on our civil servants. We wouldn't be sitting with Northern Ireland in limbo. And I'm not going to stand or talk to you here and say that it's DUP and Sinn Féin's fault. It's a plague on all our houses. We're not able to get back around the table. Now, we have put proposals through to Karen Bradley and have said to her, pinch points are coming up very, very soon. The end of July, we go bankrupt. She has to either shift this, a change of gear, and get the talks process with everybody back around the table with a focused timetable and target to achieve, or make a decision. So could be, as Mark has talked about this morning, taking forward legislation that enables our civil service, senior civil servants, to take decisions that need to be made so that Northern Ireland can move forward. But it's the Assembly's fault. We're not doing the job. And you talked about wages. Now, I'll ask a question back to you. Why has Karen Bradley not cut the pay? The Alliance Party met with her and we said to her, what's going on here? We've expected this. We've asked for this over a year ago. But where's the blockage coming from? Why is Karen Bradley not cutting the pay? I think that she needs to answer that question, because we're all waiting patiently for her to cut it. I get the complaints in, day out. Even constituents that I'm helping are saying to me, you're still getting paid. You know, it's time for the Secretary of State to stay why she's dragging her feet on this one.
And Kelly, thank you. And Mark H. Durkin joining us today as well from the SDLP. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. The world is competitive enough, Mark. I'm just sitting here thinking of all of the different countries around the world that will be competing for business, for major companies to set up shop in their country, for tourism and all of those things, where we as a relatively tiny place are trying to fight for our share of that money and that prosperity. And Northern Ireland PLC cannot make a key decision as we sit here today. Would you set up business here?
I think it's an absolutely shameful situation. What inward or potential inward investors look for, and what even Indigenous businesses look for whenever they're thinking about expanding their businesses, creating more jobs here, is certainty. And while there was already a huge lack of certainty, now what we have is sheer confusion. It's understandable, therefore, that the head of civil service wants to bring this case and that he wants to establish that clarity. But like I said, it is shameful that we're in the situation that he needs to seek that clarity. And I won't be maybe as unanimous as Kelly in terms of saying that it's all our fault. I think it's clear whose fault it is, and that's the fault of the bigger parties who have been unable to reach a deal. Their brinkmanship has brought us to this point. We have been hobbling along for 14 or 15 months. And it's pretty clear that we're running out of road here.
Here's JT this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen. Welcome back.
Go ahead.
To me, it just seems a completely absurd situation. I mean, I can understand the judge's ruling based on a sort of pure point of view from a legal perspective. But obviously, I mean, the place needs to be governed. And what were we all told? Well, at the end of the day, the understanding was if the parties couldn't sort things out, the Secretary of State would step in, direct rule would be imposed, and things would go ahead as normal. But what have we got? Limbo land.
And where are the two? Where are the two big parties? What are they going to do about this now? So the big parties, which are big because the electorate makes them big, DUP, Sinn Féin, what is their strategy around this now? What are they going to do?
I would love to know. I mean, I honestly think they're afraid of direct ruling in case people realise that the civil service might actually make common sense decisions instead of making decisions based on politics.
JT, thank you. Brian in West Belfast. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, you said it early on there. Same old, same old. I watched a programme in the hour the other night and it mentioned about when the assembly is going to be up and running again. And the speculation is 3 to 5 years or longer. Now, this place is going to come to a stop. It's going to affect people's lives. People are going to lose their lives. I guarantee if I went over the clipboard on where I live and ask people what do they expect to happen now, and it will be direct. People don't like it. It will be direct rule. Why are ministers not coming in here? Why isn't direct rule coming in now? Because it's not going to be in the assembly for 3 to 5 years, and maybe never. So let's get things moving here. There's one quick example. It may be trivial. Potholes. They're not been fixed properly and not going to be fixed. People could lose their lives in accidents through potholes that have not been fixed. that a civil servant is not going to sign off
on. We heard from the rep from Unison this morning as well. What about future pay rises for health service staff?
Yeah, but people are going to revolt here, rise up.
But do you think, Brian, people are going to revolt? People are going to rise up? And look, it's not for me to comment on that. And if they do revolt or rise up, let's hope that they do so within the law, if they do it at all.
Yes. Oh, yes, within the law.
But you know what? Do you really think that's going to happen? Or is everyone in Northern Ireland going to sit back, go on with their lives, and are they going to find themselves in a year's time or 2 years' time realising the impact in this? I said again, I'll say it one more time, Brian, we are competing with countries around Europe where they are making decisions big time to try to make their country as competitive and as prosperous as possible. Meanwhile, Northern Ireland, we're sitting in this la-la land.
Correct. I'll put it another way. If there's no assembly within 5 years and there's no direct rule, what way was this is Northern Ireland going to be? I mean, just think of that. If there's no assembly within 5 years and there's no direct rule, what's the civil servants going to do? This place would be off. Just imagine it, Stephen.
Listen, thank you for your call today. 030-30-80-55-55. Kelly Armstrong, before you go today, I should ask you about this news that we've heard this morning just after 9 o'clock on our programme that Northern Ireland is not to do anything because there's no minister to do it. On the stakes for fixed odd betting terminals being reduced to £2 per spin elsewhere in the UK. In Northern Ireland, nothing will happen.
That's right. Stephen, that's not the only piece of legislation. We currently have it that, you know, something as simple as the MOT, there's a difference now between MOTs in Northern Ireland and MOTs in the rest of the UK. We now have it that you've heard the scandal about minibus licensing where schools can't drive minibuses. GB has dropped that approach. But here in Northern Ireland, we're continuing on with that. There's a lot of things that are happening. In fact, this morning there's a meeting with the NIO about the withdrawal bill. And what we're looking at is actually the framework of legislation within the United Kingdom between Northern Ireland, England, Scotland and Wales. Northern Ireland is not following a pace with everyone else with their legislation. So what does that mean? We are becoming more and more different from the rest of the UK. We can't keep going like this. And I can't stress enough, we go bankrupt at the end of July. The vote on account gave us 45% of our budget, which runs out at the end of July. We don't have any more time. It is today that the Secretary of State needs to say, right, guys, back around the table, or I'm going to take forward the legislation. We don't want to get to the stage where Westminster goes off on its big, long summer recess and leaves Northern Ireland in this wilderness any longer.
Wow.
We need to be put together. We need to have an independent facilitator. Northern Ireland expects us to be at work. I want to be at work. I'm calling on Karen Bradley to put us back to work.
Kelly Armstrong, thank you.